I am super excited to announce our speaker tonight, Dr. Nancy White. I've known Nancy now for
a long time.
And I'm going to read her bio so I don't leave anything out, and then I'll comment on personal note. She holds a doctorate in clinical psychology and is licensed in Texas as a psychologist, marriage and family therapist, and an advanced addiction counselor. She is recognized as a pioneer in the field of applied neuroscience, serving as a consultant editor for the Journal of Neurotherapy and contributing author to 2 college-level textbooks. She is a frequent speaker at professional conferences internationally, as well as nationally, like A4M, which is a place that I actually spent a year speaking, and has conducted workshops and trainings for healthcare professionals, both in the U.S. and abroad. If you haven't seen her and heard her talk, specifically where my heart went is when my son was in junior high and struggling with ADD and ADHD. And we were told he was 4th grade, and we were told that he needed to be on medication. And my husband and I had made a decision that we didn't want to do that. We wanted to try behavioral and nutrition. And the nutrition part I had down pretty well. But there were other things. And so I took some workshops and continue. She hosts at their center, they host beautiful workshops. But that's where I learned that there's more to learning. There's more to the brain that we probably will ever understand, especially in the field of the neurofeedback. So with that, she speaks a lot. There's a great on the iHealth channel. There's a great one on ADD and ADHD that she talks about on why not medication and what else options you are. And that's what this meeting is all about. It's all about there are choices, and to educate yourself on those choices, and for practitioners to network together, again, for the betterment of your patients. So I know we have some healthcare professionals here tonight. If you raise your hand. Cool, very good. So make sure you do meet one another. And those of you that are interested in learning more, of course, Dr. White's going to be here afterwards as well. And she has a table over here that we'll talk a little bit more as well too. But with that, she is going to talk to us about the holidays and not letting stress steal our joy. Help me welcome Dr. Nancy White.
Thank you, Suzanne. So I will announce at the beginning, I am totally against medication. So my life is sort of dedicated to finding better ways to accomplish the same kind of outcome. So Suzanne asked me to talk about the holidays. And to me, if I said to you all, we've got 24 more days till Christmas. What do you feel and what do you think? I mean, most of us don't have just great joy in that. There's all kinds of stress that enters in that picture. And that stress comes from a lot of different things of the past. I love this picture. It was like, to me, that's Christmas. It's like, you know, what are you going to do? And you don't want to, I really don't want to do anything. I just want to sort of enjoy it and don't have any expectations of me. Just let me enjoy it. But that's not what it's about. I mean, I don't know if you all are old, you're certainly not as old as I am, but I don't know if you're old enough to remember Norman Rockwell. But when I think of Christmas, I think of all the Norman Rockwell paintings of Christmas. And that's my expectation of Christmas. It's never met. So we make the best of it, and we smile when we can. So what we find is that there's a lot of underlying problems that people have that get exaggerated in the stress of Christmas. with the expectations of you, the expectations of the gifts, for the expectations of the perfect gift, and we could go on and on and on and on of things that are expected of you at Christmas, or that you expect of yourself at Christmas. So we have enormous traffic. We were just talking about, Leonard and I left the office at 3:30 today. You'd have thought it was 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. It was unbelievable. Yeah. At 3:30 on Thursday afternoon. Well, that creates stress. And anything that creates stress negatively affects us on multitudes of levels. Physically, emotionally, attitudinally, relationally, I mean, it's bad news. So we can't get it all done. We try to act like it's okay, and we try to have a happy face about it, but it doesn't work too well. So we get triggered by a lot of holiday pressures. And if you have any underlying problems, then they get exaggerated. You know, and multitudes of people have underlying problems of depression, or we could call it dysthymia, and panics, and et cetera. And I just, you know, I just read again something that I had read many years ago, but I just read this week, and I'm not even sure why it came up on my internet, but the fact that in the year 2000, JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, published some research that showed that 225,000 people a year are dying from medical interventions. And this was the Journal of the American Medical Association. And then they went ahead to say in their report that that meant that 2.25 million died from this every year. Well, I think it's much higher than that now, because I think we're much, much more into medication for everything. Yeah. I mean, that you name it, we've got a medication for it. So that to me just spurs me on to figure out other ways to deal with the underlying stresses that get so exaggerated when we're dealing with holiday pressures. You know, we get a lot of complaints about sleeplessness, and then people are overeating, they go to parties, and they love the sugar table and the alcohol table, and it just goes on and on from there. So we do what we can do to avoid that, but most of us don't avoid it really too well. So what we can do is we can look and see what can we do to minimize it, because there are things we can do to minimize it. One of the things that I find is the most important, and I work with a lot of patients about and don't have much luck with, are thought patterns. They get on subjects and they go, they ruminate and they go over and over the same damn thing. I mean, this one guy, he says, I'm 25 years old. It's like, and? You know? And it's like, I don't know what he thinks he should be at 25, but it ain't where he is. So, I tell him, I said, one of the things that I did many years ago before I was ever introduced to the field of psychology, I said, I realized that I had this subject that I was thinking about, and it really bugged me, and I ruminated over it, and I went over it and over it, and I had the wisdom somehow to recognize I was doing it to myself, that it was my thoughts. It wasn't even out there. It was what I was afraid was going to be out there. And so with that, I thought, okay, what can I do? Well, I pat myself on my back for my wisdom, because at that point, I'd never even heard of anything in the field of psychology called thought replacement, but that was the only thing I could think of to do. It's like, I gotta find some way, because I knew that the whole psyche abhorred a vacuum, so I knew I had to put something there. I couldn't just say, don't think about it. It wasn't gonna work. So what came to my mind was, I thought, what can I do? And I thought, the 23rd Psalm. I don't think I've thought about it since I was in high school. So I went and found a Bible, and I read the 23rd Psalm, and I thought, oh, this is good, you know. It's got a lot of power because it's really old, and it's very supportive, and it's very spiritual, and it really might do the trick. And plus the fact, it was long enough that I had to focus on it in order to remember it. And it was short enough that I could remember it. So I sat and I memorized it, and I can even recite most of it now. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me, etc. It's still, I went over it so many times. And so every time those thoughts came into my mind, I would start reciting the 23rd Psalm. And if I got to the end of it and I went back to the silly thoughts, I started again. It took me about 6 months, and I really haven't thought those thoughts since. It works. Well, I try to get patients to do it, and I say, you know, you can control your thoughts, but you have to figure out your own method for how you're going to do that. Well, that's one of the major things you can do, especially with anything, but especially in the holidays when the stress exaggerates everything negative in your life and everything in the future that you're afraid is not going to happen or is going to happen. So there's a lot we can do to be mindful about what we're doing. And one of the things that we are aware of, especially in the field of psychology, is that our thoughts attract things. I don't know exactly how, but I think it's with a frequency and a resonance. Sure enough, what we think about just happened to us. And it's like, oh, shit. So we need to figure out what we can do to work with our thoughts. One of the things that, I don't know, how many of you all remember Masaru Emoto? I assume there's a few of you, since you didn't raise your hand, I assume there's a few of you that don't know who Emoto is. Emoto, unfortunately, is no longer on the planet. I don't know how he died, because he was a pretty young man, but he did. And he was a Japanese guy that was very interested in the vibration of thoughts. I think he called them Hado, H-A-D-O. And he worked for years trying to ascertain a way to show the power of thoughts. And he found that what you think about affects what's around you. And so what he did was he got water, and he would get a little glass of water, and he would put a taped name on it. Like one, I remember one he taped on was Mother Teresa, and then he taped on Satan. And it was amazing, because then he had a process where he had a refrigerated room and a little guy in an Eskimo thing taking photographs of the crystals as they formed. And the crystals were affected by what was taped on the water. And so the crystal of Mother Teresa was this beautiful, lovely crystal. And the crystal of Satan was distorted and ugly. It was no crystal at all. It was distortion. Leonard and I had the good fortune to hear him in Mexico. I think we were in Mexico on vacation, and I opened the little paper where they have the people that live there, and they have a little paper in it. I saw this crystal, and I knew immediately that was Emoto's crystal. So 3 bus rides later, we finally got to where he was presenting at a little college, and it was remarkable. And it was really remarkable because he only spoke Japanese, and so they translated that to Spanish, and then they translated the Spanish to English. I had time to really think about everything he said as he said it. And that was a real advantage to me. So if you look at that, the top one is love and appreciation. That's the crystal that he created. And you can see how beautiful it is. And then he created one that said sick and kill, and you can see how ugly it is. And it was amazing. He would play music to the water, and then he would freeze these crystals. And I remember one was Swan Lake, and it literally looked as if they were dancing a ballet. I mean, it was, if you saw it, it would change your reality. I mean, when you realize how much power every thought and every word you say has. It is out there. It is provable. It is not just somebody's fantasy thought. It is really powerful. So just, you all remember those pictures and look up. It's like he's got all kinds, he's got about 4, 5, or 6 books on water. And it's quite amazing what you can get from that. And to remember that the brain is a non-linear dynamical system, that it has attractors. And from my point of view, the attractors are the woundings that we've had in our life. They sort of hang in there, and they're always ready to respond to anything similar that's out there. So any significant memory becomes an attraction. And it's pretty remarkable how we can keep recreating and recreating these attractors. And it's really, it's fascinating being a marriage and family therapist and having people come in and hearing the same story that they tell you over and over and over, and they don't realize they're telling you the same story, but they're telling you different names, different people, different situations, but they're all the same dynamic because the attractor is attracting it. So we have to be really careful with that, and that's really a lot of what therapy is about, in my opinion, is cleaning up the crap that we've got hanging out there. So the real question we want to ask is, do my attractors serve me? Notice the patterns of your life. What keeps happening to you over and over? What's the relational dynamics that keep reoccurring? And as you do that, just know that's your stuff, and you're attracting it. You know, as this one guy told me, he said, "I just keep choosing the wrong woman." No. You're the one that's choosing her, and there's some reason there. It's not about her, it's about you. You know, and it may be about those controlling nuns that you had when you were a little child and your controlling mother, so I think you need to go work on that. So after the fifth woman and the fifth year, he finally went and worked on it. So as I say, holidays may be not the perfect time to try to clean up your life and go back and look at your childhood and look at your relation with your parents, but it is a time to look at what all is going on and how the brain-body system is a system, and it's a system of connection, and that we need to address that. We need to look at what are we doing with this brain-body system. One of the things that we do is we do a lot of testing. I'm really for testing. There's so much you can learn about people. I get so frustrated with some of the medical doctors who someone walks in and they say, "Oh, I'm so depressed," and they say, "Oh, well, here's an antidepressant." Well, we do a lot of neurotransmitter testing, and I can tell you I have had several people that are on antidepressants, they have too much serotonin. And it's not like the doctors can't find that out. It's really remarkable. And I had one client, he was from a lovely Middle Eastern family, and they're very clannish. And so his sister, he didn't have a wife, so his sister came to be with him while he went through his problems and therapy and so forth. And she had to go back home, so his cousin came. And his cousin came to meet me, and this was one of our last meetings, and it turns out that he said, "I'm Dr. So-and-so." And I thought, "Oh, shit." What's he gonna think of me, you know? And so he said, "And I'm an MD Anderson." And I thought, "Oh my God." And so I said, and I tend to be kind of outspoken, I was just telling Suzanne, sometimes I put my foot in my mouth like Donald Trump. And I'm real forgiving of him. I'm understanding. So I thought, oh my gosh. So I said, well, if, and he said, oh, and I'm studying to be a psychiatrist. And I said, okay, well, if you're going to be a psychiatrist, you better come in here and listen to me. So he sat there, and so this guy had been on a list of medications this long, and he was so much better, and he was on a little tiny bit of Paxil was left. And I said, you know, you really need to get off that Paxil, and you've done all the work, and I think you're going to be fine. And his cousin sitting on the sofa said, well, you just might need that little bit of extra serotonin. And I said, I don't think so. I said, let me show you. And I pull out my neuroscience test, and serotonin has this red line all the way over with much too much. And he looked at me like, oh my God, you're magic. He said, where did you get that? I said, well, there's a testing we do. He said, really? Well, we talked on, and when he got ready to leave, he said, did you ever think about being on Dr. Oz? No. So I'm really delighted that Transformation and several other people in town do these kind of presentations, because every now and then we do have some medical doctors show up, and they need to learn what's available, and they're not taught that in medical school, that's for sure. So we do a food sensitivity test, we do the micronutrient test, we do the metal toxicity test, we do the neurotransmitter test, and I can tell you, one of the ones that concerns me a lot is the metal toxicity. We are in such a toxic world, and frankly, all of us ought to be on some kind of chelation every day just to manage. So,
Dr. White, what test do you prefer for the metals? Do you do a hair or do you do serum?
We do urine. We do a Chelex. I've forgotten what company has Chelex, but we do it with a formula and so forth, which, because heavy metals hide. And so if you just test them, you find that they're fine. And so I remember, I still grieve over one little boy. He was about 6 years old, and he was off. I did a hair test on him. He was off the charts with lead. And so I told his mother, well, of course, she rushed off to the pediatrician. The pediatrician did a blood test and said he doesn't have any lead. So of course, she never came back and never did anything about it. But I learned from Dot Merritt, who's our medical director. Dot always said, Nancy, if you want to know what they've done in the last 30 days, do a blood test. And a hair test goes a long way back, and a urine test goes pretty far. But we find it just the most convenient, especially when everybody's got stuff on their hair if they're female. So, you know, you can't do a hair test. So the easiest thing is to do that. So we do the Chelex tablets, or capsules they are, and it gives a certain formula that you do, and then you collect the urine for, I can't remember, 6 hours or 9 hours or something like that. And the Chelex causes the body to release those metals so you can find out what's there. So, or you can do a little small chelation, and when Dot was at the on the other side of our waiting room, we could do just a little short chelation with an IV drip, and that was a good way to find it. And I have, there are half a dozen different things you can do for chelation, and you never know what's the best. I don't know what to do. If you can do the IV drips, but they're time consuming, expensive, and there are not very many people doctors that do them. So this is just a little example of one of our neuroscience neurotransmitter tests, and you can see all the little red lines. This guy's depressed. He is very, very under aroused. Everything is low. All the dopamine, the serotonin, and the norepinephrine, the PEA, and you name it. And the only thing he's okay on, and he's kind of okay on, is the serotonin. But everything else is low. So to find out what's there, and then neuroscience have really nice amino acid formulas that we have people do. So where did we go? Did I skip one? Yes, I think it is. there. So we go back to one of our favorite subjects nowadays that it's, we didn't used to talk about this till about 3 years ago, and now everybody's talking about the brain-gut connection. And we know that about 85% of serotonin is made in the gut, not the brain. And so we talk a lot about getting the brain right and the gut right. And so if our gut's not right, we can have, it can be the source of our depression. It can be the source of our anxiety and behaviors and so forth. So it's really important to begin to look at the whole system and not just what you do with your mother and what's your relationship like now and you know, where's your neurotransmitters? It's like it's a whole system of everything, and you gotta look at everything. So we know that if the brain's not right, it doesn't deliver the right messages to the gut, and if the gut's not right, it's not doing what it needs to do for the brain, and so that needs to be fixed. And so we've got all the little friends that are in our gut, and there's lots and lots of them, and they've got to be in good balance. All the little bacteria and the candida, and if they're not in good balance, then what's going to happen is we're going to have inflammation, and we're going to have leaky gut, and we're going to have all the things that you're hearing about. But you got to really work with what's there and see what's inside you. We've got a vagus nerve that if it's very connected to the brain, and all that little kind of yellow thing that goes all the way through, goldish, it goes all the way from the brain, all the way to the gut, all the way to the anus. It's like you gotta appreciate what's there and how it's all talking to itself. So if you've got a lot of stress, then it affects and upsets the HPA axis, the hypothalamus, the pituitary, and the adrenal. So it produces too much cortisol. And again, you just gotta be in good balance, but you've got to address it, because chemical signals are put out there, and if you don't, if you ignore them, you just go down, down, down. And you blame other things, and then you get an antidepressant. And that fixes everything, you know that. So it's important to develop and support a really healthy gut and to pay attention to our diet. We make a big deal about the food you eat at our office. And I know that just recently Dr. Osborne was here, and he was talking about his gluten. And so I really have begun to believe that gluten is really toxic for most of us. And now that glycophosphate has been added to all of our wheat and everything else, it's like that one, I was a little sloppy with the gluten, but I was doing pretty good. But when I heard they were putting Roundup on the wheat, I thought, I don't need this anymore, and I really don't eat any more gluten. So we need things like probiotics and digestive enzymes and there. This is, to me, you got one of the best sources sitting right here. Is we are very fortunate with people that we have in Houston with transformation. And we're fortunate we've got SpectraCell. We're fortunate that we can go and hear presentations, and that these companies are so generous and so out there for us, and they're really good at educating us about what's there and what we need to do. So what we do at our office is we, besides all the testing, we have it's not just find out what's there, and then what are you going to do about it? So we have a lot of therapies that are designed really to improve the mood and so forth. Our biggie is the Nexalin. It's a transcranial electrical stimulation. It's been FDA cleared. It's non-invasive. It's capable of normalizing the chemistry. It stimulates the hypothalamus with the frequency. and a very specific waveform, and there are no serious side effects. We've had hundreds of people go through it now, and I can't think of any of them that's had a negative side effect. Sometimes for a few days, as they sort of are detoxing whatever is there, for a few days, and I'm talking about 3 or 4 days, they will feel more negative, but then it quickly goes away. And the hypothalamus, to me, is really magical. The hypothalamus, I think we don't even have a clue how important it is. And you're not going to find it in research, and you're not going to find it in neuroanatomy books, but there's something that it kind of drives the core of who we are. And I say to people, I can't tell you about it because we have never had a population of people where we have just focused a therapy on the hypothalamus. And I see just remarkable things happen with people, and it's as if the brain-body system decides what's going to change first. And so we have wonderful things happen with that hypothalamus. It regulates. We know that it's often called the brain's brain, but it's more than that. And I can't even tell you what's more. Leonard and I wrote a chapter on it. Leonard did all the research for it and so forth, and he even found something back in the 1930s that seemed to be a little more information in the 1930s than we even know now about the hypothalamus. So that's a really remarkable treatment that we are able to use. It's very simple. You take a nap for 40 minutes every day for 2 or 3 weeks, and your life changes for the better. It's like, as a therapist and having been trained for all those years and so forth, and to suddenly find that I didn't do anything except put a little thing on their head and behind their ear, and their life changed. It's like, whoa, okay. It's FDA cleared for depression, anxiety, and insomnia. And it's wonderful what can happen with people. Here is just a pre-post Nexilin. We frequently do a lot of neurofeedback, a lot of training the brain, but this one is the relative power, and you can see on the top row, especially if you go across there, the first one says delta, that's a sleep wave, the next one is theta, that's that creative out to lunch wave, the next one is alpha, and that's the relaxed but alert wave, and the next one is beta, and that's a nice functional wave, and then there's the high beta, that's the over arousal in the brain, and you can see, here's someone with anxiety, and you see the anxiety. You know, we have patterns in the brain that we have a pretty good idea of what's going on with people. And so I tell people a lot, you know, the doctors, instead of doing a blood test, they really need to do a quantitative EEG and have that as a baseline so they can come back to it years later if you've got some kind of problem. They can see what was the baseline of that. So as you can see, the bottom row, this is after. I think that was after about 10 or 15 sessions. And it resolved a lot of the problem. Now, it doesn't always, because the Nexilin is more neurochemical. And we do the neurofeedback, which is more neuroelectrical. And so we are able to do a lot of neat things with that. Whoops. This one is kind of our secret tool. Most people don't know anything about light therapy. All they know about is seasonal affective disorder. You know, people get depressed in the far north in the wintertime. And they put you in front of a bright light. And if you do the bright light every day, you feel better. If you miss a few days, you don't feel better anymore. But this particular machine, I was fortunate to be at a conference 35 years ago. And Dr. John Downing, who had been the president of the College of Syntonic Optometry, which we probably have never heard of in this room anymore, but syntonic optometry is using light and color and for remarkable healings. And so he developed this machine. He had backers, he had investors, and he was way ahead of his time. And he had just done this machine when I came across it and bought it. And his, not too long after that, his investors, people didn't get it, and nobody was buying it, just me, you know. And so people would say, I don't get it, you know, why would I spend that kind of money for light, you know? But the investors finally said, you know, close it down. So there aren't any more. And it was interesting, I was looking for something on the internet a few months ago, and something popped up called chronotherapy, and I thought, chronotherapy, what is that? And so I started looking at it, and it looked like a really cheap version of what I had, and I thought, who's putting out this? And it was Columbia Medical School. And so I, out of curiosity, I looked up to see what chronotherapy was, and it was really sort of to change the time you go to bed at night and the time you can go to sleep, and to change that that pattern, which isn't nearly what this will do. So I will tell you what this will do, because it's rather amazing. And it's quite true. When you have a lot of stress in your life, and when you have some mild head injuries in your life, what happens is your vision field begins to close in. And you can measure this. And we have a whole thing we used to measure, but it took about an hour and a half to do it. And then after we'd done the therapy, we measured it again, and it opened the vision field. And so it was like 3 hours of work, and it was like, that's what's gonna happen. So we quit spending that kind of time and that kind of money. So, but what happens is that the stress of life closes your vision field down. So it's like looking at the world through a knothole. And even if you're a farmer out on a tractor, if you've had a head injury, you are not getting enough light. And light is nutrition for the brain. And so if you're not getting enough light, what are you gonna do about it? No one really knows, except Dr. Downing knew. It's a light that with an optometric lens, and it has a frequency, and it has a wavelength, which is a color. So we can dial the color, we can dial the frequency, and if you sit there, and there must be something about a flashing light as opposed to a solid light, because they sit people with seasonal affective disorder in front of these bright lights, full spectrum, but it doesn't hold. This holds, and it can be really good for depression, but more than anything, you're gonna be healthier if you do the light. And we have had several head injured people that they wear these dark glasses because they're so light sensitive. When they're so light sensitive, that's a sign there's something wrong with pupil dilation. There's something wrong with how your brain-body system is adjusting to the light out there. And so if you will just do the light, eventually it will fix itself. So that's our sort of little secret tool. And as I say, we've had a lot of people come in that just couldn't tolerate any light at all after head injury. And we put them on that, and you have to start them with a really dark sort of, I don't even remember the color, but it's a dark red light. And then you can brighten it up a little, and then brighten it up a little more, until pretty soon you go out in the sunlight and you don't have to have dark glasses. I talk to myself about that every day because I am so light sensitive and I'm not taking the time to do it. So, well, if you just really look and see what is it that you need to do to get your body and your brain healthier. And if you will just do all of that, what you can find is that when you do these therapies and you do these testing, that eventually you find a balance in a homeostasis, and life works better. And certainly Christmas is less stressful. So, any questions?
Yes? About the when you test, when you do your testing for food sensitivities, are you using the Alka?
No, and I've forgotten. Diana can tell you what we use because I never remember. What do you use for food sensitivity?
The company,
uh-huh.
U.S. Biotech.
Biotech.
Oh, yeah.
It's a blood test.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else?
Questions?
Okay.
Do you still allow tours for healthcare professionals if they would like to see and learn more?
Sure.
I know that's how I first got to see your office, was touring the office. It's quite impressive, actually. Their whole system, and they do work, I mentioned children, which you do. What is the percentage of children to adults?
Well, you know, it varies. It used to be probably 75% children, maybe 80% children and some adults, and now it's the other way around. We have mostly adults, and we have, I think, 5 autistics now that Leonard works with, and he is really good with the autistic children.
They come from all over.
Yeah.
I had a little boy from Kuwait, some prince's grandson, and we had a boy from Egypt. They came over.
We used to have a lot of people from Mexico, but now they've got quite a bit of treatment in Mexico now.
Some good practitioners now.
Yeah.
But one of the things that we do with the neurofeedback and the neurostimulation, which is the TES and transcranial magnetic, is to create improvement in connectivity with these autistic children and get them more functional. And we had one boy who was very quiet and very complacent, and we started training him, and he started saying no to his mother. and started engaging her, and all of a sudden she didn't have a little vegetable anymore. She had somebody to talk to, and so that's the kind of work that can be done with these testings and with these neurostimulation. So it's not all about medication; it's about getting the brain to work, and the brain is a series of frequency patterns. It has its own language, electrical language, which is a combination of many things, frequencies, base, steps, all of these things that let other parts of the brain know what to do. And when that's disrupted, whether it be from a head injury or from stress, that lift, or from anything else, the ability to get that working again creates very rapid shifts in intelligence or the ability to use it, and the other things that help you become more functional.
Have you seen improvements in memory then as well?
Yes. Yeah, there are parts of the brain. We have Dominic DiLoretto here on the table, who is one of our resident experts on some of these trainings, and he can tell you where in the brain he needs to find a region of interest to train for memory.
Nice. Very good.
Yes, ma'am.
And on the TES, the transcranial electrical stimulation, if you have, are there any contraindications on, like, can you use it on people with pacemakers? Is it okay or not?
Seizures.
I don't know, Dominic. We've never had anybody with a pacemaker. Do you think there's any contraindication? I wouldn't think of any reason why not.
No, we've had a couple kind of random, like, unique individuals, and basically how we do it is we've tried it, and everything has seemed okay. I think we did have a pacemaker like a year ago,
uh-huh.
And it was okay. It's just real mild. And
it's very mild.
Yeah.
And you can't feel it. It's hardly more than your digital watch.
You know, so many of them are so ingrained into medical. You know, I can't do anything if I'm hooked up to anything that's electrical. So,
you've got the NeuroStar, which is a neuromagnetic stimulation, and It is so powerful. I mean, it's kind of scary and uncomfortable, as I understand. But this one, you just take a nap. It's really nice. Yes.
Nancy, what are you doing with the as far as the nutritional connection with, especially the autistic children?
Well, how we're doing it, we encourage food sensitivity tests, but we don't always get cooperation on that level. We definitely encourage diet, and we don't always get cooperation on that level. And we encourage everybody to avoid pesticides and to buy organic and to avoid gluten, you know, a lot of that kind of thing. And then if they have the food sensitivity, if they will take that test, that helps a lot. To give them something they can look at. Even some of the kids will, when they can see it and see that it's some objective test, it, somehow it's different from mama telling them they shouldn't eat that.
Right.
So anytime we can get them to test.
Many parents are surprised when they come to us, they're surprisingly sophisticated about their children and what they should eat. If you have patterns where a kid will eat nothing but broccoli and oatmeal or something like that and rejects a lot of the good food, you really have to be very creative with that. But a lot of parents have already learned what not to do with children. But you go to the supermarket, you have a hard time doing that. And by the, you know, we had one mother, bless her heart, she was a professor at one of the colleges here. One professor, she had three autistic children, And one of them was light in the spectrum, the other was quite deep. And we worked with them over a summer. But she had that down, what they should eat, what they shouldn't eat, how they should maintain health, because that has a lot to do, as Nancy said earlier, with how the brain functions. And you know, if you're a psychologist and you're doing therapy on someone and it's a significant knot in their psyche, if you haven't looked at their gut, if you haven't looked at the neurochemistry, you're going to be fighting an uphill battle with your client. And so all of this comes together as a systemic view of what this person is and what has to be done to build their mental health. So that's the whole point of what Nancy's been saying tonight, is that this is a system. It's a distributed, the physical body, the mental and the emotional and the consciousness that we are, is a distributed system. And as a result, you know, you look at complexity theory and say, what are we going to do with this patient? Well, how many people get taught complexity theory in psychology? So the process is that most doctors and a fair number of psychologists think in a linear way. Symptom, antidote. Symptom, antidote. Problem, you know, process. And when in fact it's a system. You interfere with the system with a linear answer and you get side effects. And that's how it works.
Can you talk a little bit about the spectrocell testing?
Yes. Spectrocell does a lot of testing now, but the one I really like, and I tried really hard to put some examples in the PowerPoint, and I just never could figure out how to make it copy, so I didn't do it. But you get the one that I like best and the one I try to do about once a year. They take all the micronutrients and the vitamins and the minerals and so forth, and you, it's a blood test, and they run that through and you get it back with a really nice way of looking at it. So you can just glance at it and see where you're low and how low you are, etc. And then they also will make suggestions as to repletion, what you can do to do it. And I know that I make a big deal about vitamin D3 and how important it is for respiratory, and I go on and on and on and on. And I ran out of vitamin D3 about 2 or 3 months ago, and I just think I'm going to order that. And I didn't. And so it was time to do my SpectraCell. I did, and I got it back, and I was really low on vitamin D3, and within 3 days, and I don't remember the middle or actual, but within 3 days, I had a respiratory problem. So it's like, it's valuable to find out, you know, where you are with all of that. And SpectraCell is right out here on the other side of Beltway 8. And so we will, Leonard and I will go out there, and we'll send patients out there, and they'll pull your blood at SpectraCell, and Diana writes up all the orders, and we get it back in about 2 weeks or so.
And transformations is one of the primary people that we look at in terms of creating and maintaining gut health. These guys are tops.
They have all the probiotics and all the digestive enzymes and so forth. Yes, Carol.
Following up on the discussion with the gut, the brain, and the different ways that you may suggest to parents and others about eating, think of somebody who's completely non-compliant with the diet. How, you know, and this is just the linear solution, do you still see improvement with some of these other therapies, or, you know, is it minimal because they're just not taking care of this other side of them?
We definitely see improvement, but we don't see the complete resolution that we frequently do otherwise if we have a really compliant patient. But yes, there's improvement, because when you shape up the brain, there's a lot that's going to work better. And the brain controls more, and several doctors have told me they weren't taught anything about the brain to speak of in medical school, and it just blows my mind. Like, you're kidding. It's what runs the show. Yeah. Yeah.
Is the food, I mean, the neurotransmitter test, is that blood also?
No, it's urine.
Oh, that's a urine test.
It's very specific the way you go about it, but it's urine, and we usually do a cortisol test with that also, and so that is saliva.
Okay.